Full Service Radio programming is available on our website, fullserviceradio.org, and as a podcast, thanks to Simplecast. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
All right, friends, welcome. It's Monday at Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, cheeseburger profiler, mezcal masseuse, and 100% taco sexual.
I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist. Welcome back, DCist, by the way. Dumpling monster and bartender emeritus about town. Every week, we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, cooks, bartenders, bakers, and brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week, we are joined by Sam Medley, owner of Charles Medley Distillery. And we're here with Dan Searing, too, a local bartender, bar owner, and actually my mentor for years and years and years in the,
nervous,
in the arts so of nervous. Cocktails. I know. As I stare him down. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie.
This has to be, I think, the most glassware we've ever had in a show. I'm looking at like 12 plus glasses.
We're pretty low tech to begin with, as it is. Usually cocktails, if we do have one, come pre-batched, but Dan is here to graciously actually make us cocktails a la minute.
I pre-batched the sour mix.
Oh. That's fine. That's you have a shaker ready to go and everything. Well, let's first talk about the our shift drink today. We have three great bourbons right in front of us, and then Dan wants to make us a bourbon sour.
That's right.
Now, so I do have to. I have to move. I should tell you, gentlemen, after this. So, load it up. I feel like moving wasted is so much more fun.
Matthew is a proud new homeowner now.
It's true.
So he is moving out of his English basement.
Well, you picked the coolest day of the year to move.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and my poor fiance is actually moving without me right now while I dabble in the dark arts of bourbon on the radio.
Your cat is not happy?
No. Our cat is so angry.
Speaking of how hot it is right now, we were talking just a moment ago about how to describe how hot it is. And what are the various descriptors that I heard?
Well, Dan sent a link to an article on Mashable to me that somebody had studied the Twitter people tweeting about hot as balls, hot as dick, hot as hell, and comparing their geolocator to what the temperature was at that time. And, you know, I think we found out that, like, hotter than the devil's dick was the hottest, and that's hotter than hot as dick, which is hotter than hot as balls.
Is there anything that does not use male genitalia?
Hot as hell.
Hot as hell?
Yeah.
I think there's also one about hotter than two rats copulating in a wool sock.
Yeah, oh, that's hot.
Man, that sounds hot.
So that does involve genitalia, but
that's hot.
But rat genitalia.
All right. So, what do we for this whiskey sour? What are we doing?
So I'm going to make this with Medley Brothers 102 proof bourbon, a high proof bourbon, which is great for cocktails because the flavor comes through really well. And some pre-batched sour mix, which is just equal parts 1-to-1 simple syrup and fresh squeezed lemon juice. So 2 ounces of bourbon and an ounce and a half of the sour mix is what I've been drinking at home.
Well, Dan asked me yesterday what was my favorite shift drink or favorite cocktail. And I, you know, obviously I like bourbon. That's, I'm the eighth generation in my family to be in the bourbon business. So I got to like it. It's a good thing I like it. and I thought, well, you know, a lot of people think of bourbon as a brown drink, a fall drink, a winter drink, a cool weather drink. And I actually don't think that's 100% right. I think bourbon is very versatile. And I mean, this is miserably hot today, and so I knew that it was going to be. And I told Dan, I said, look, you know, one of the most famous bourbon drinks is an old-fashioned, and that involves ice, citrus, fruit. Well, that's pretty summer-oriented. And so he said, well, and I said, I like when there's citrus in a bourbon cocktail. And he said, well, we'll do whiskey sours. I said, that's great.
Now, what is your guys' relationship together? You guys seems like go back.
We went
a
to high
bit.
School together.
Did you really?
No, of course not. That's one of the lies. I would have told you two truths
and a lie. All right, now making it easier for us. Great, thank you.
So Sam and I met because I work for the Winebow Group and the Country Vintner as a spirit specialist, and we are lucky enough to have Sam's family's bourbon in our portfolio. And I guess we met, what was it, 4 years ago?
I think 4 years ago, yeah.
So during the last World Cup. We hit it off because we have a lot of things in common besides a love for bourbon, such as esoteric vocabulary, obscure and not so obscure pop music, and a few
Ooh,
other things.
Ooh, divulge.
Well, I don't know what there is to divulge.
Are we talking like Carly Rae Jepsen, or
no.
more like yacht rock.
Ah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I love some yacht rock.
Yeah. It's coming back. Well, I guess it is back.
Oh, it's back.
Yeah, it's back.
Dan, you're wearing a Team USA soccer jersey, soccer kit, but who are you voting? Or who are you cheering on?
I'm cheering for Iceland.
The underdog, yeah. You
know, yeah, the underdog. And I've visited there. I like the culture. And I think actually the effort that they've made as a country to improve their soccer program should be a model for getting the U.S. back into contention as well. But I'm kind of wearing it ironically as well, because Sam and I are going to a Nats game later today. Sam's a huge baseball fan. Oh. It'll be my first time at Nats Park. I knew red is a good color to wear to a Nats game. And I also know that Sam is not a fan of U.S. soccer, although he is a fan of the sport. So it's, you know, this is covering a lot of bases.
Yeah.
So while Dan makes the whiskey sour, he's about to shake it up right now. I'm going to hear some of that shaking going on. Let's talk about your family history in making brown spirits.
Well, yeah, I'm the eighth generation of my family to be in the business. My father is seventh generation and master distiller in the business, and he and I own 100% of the company that owns these brands. And then you referenced before the show, we have a couple of special release brands. Dan is shaking our whiskey sour, so that's
in the corner
with a shake face and everything.
So I was born into it, and you know, the history of my family in the business is not always bourbon. I mean, what they made seven generations ago when my great 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 grandfather came from England to an area right here in Maryland that's now known as Medley's Neck on the Potomac River.
Came
and brought his still with him, and then came as an indentured servant, and then created a distilled product that probably was fruit-based, probably more similar to what we think of as apple brandy today.
Sure.
And then he would sell it, save the money, and then 5 years later, he brought his family from England to settle here. And then seven generations later, we're now like all the other distilling families based in Kentucky, the Bluegrass State. And so today, my father and I own this portfolio of brands that we all that we call our Heritage Collection, because they're actually real brands that were sold or discontinued when bourbon was not popular, that my father and I brought back during this renaissance of bourbon.
I mean, that's a lot of family history. I'm sure at this point, it's whiskey kind of has to be in your genes.
Well, it totally is. I mean, that's, you know, that's all that my, you know, I knew growing up. And then my grandfather and my great-grandfather and all the way back, that's what they did. In fact, my great-grandfather was a fifth-generation distiller, and in 1902, he married my great-grandmother, who was the daughter of a fourth-generation distiller, the Wathen family. So the name Wathens comes originally from that family, which was a distilling family, but then also it was my grandfather's first name. Like so many people in the South, his first name was his mother's maiden name. And her maiden name was Wathen, so that was his first name. So he created the Wathen's brand using his first name.
Wow. I imagine that also made you probably pretty popular in high school.
Yeah, I've never been popular.
Yeah. why get a fake ID when you have your own hooch?
Well, all the kids had their own hooch, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I actually, the first time I actually got liquor, it was from some woman who was making her own bathtub gin. I don't know how we hooked up with her, but like, we went to her house and she like poured us off some to a mason jar, and then we went to, and this is Michigan, And then we went to a Dave Matthews concert.
Classic, classic dry Michigan gin.
I hate Dave Matthews.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the bathtub gin made it a little bit better.
No, it couldn't. There's not enough. I saw Dave Matthews once, October 1st of 1995, at Farm Aid in Louisville, Kentucky. And that was before he was real popular. And, you know, I just was not prepared for the horror that he was going to bring upon.
You should know that Dave Matthews is one of our biggest fans.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's listening.
Well, oh, he lives in Virginia, doesn't he?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Dave, if you live in Virginia, please call in.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, Dan. This looks amazing.
Now, just a moment.
Oh God, yeah.
A moment ago, you were you just got off a plane.
I did.
Thank you for coming straight here.
You flew all the way here for the show. That's amazing.
I know. Just this morning, I had to get up at 4:30 this morning.
Well, it's all part of the full service philosophy.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Brought your hooch with you, and now you're eating Popeye's chicken.
Oh, I love Popeye chicken, yeah. Well, I didn't get to... DC I got up classic. At 4:30. I had to get on the plane and get here, and then...
So how's the pairing?
Bourbon sour Popeye with plus whiskey sour is delicious. You know, it's a better pairing than their red beans and rice.
I actually wanted to ask, do you usually drink when you're on a flight?
Never.
No?
Never. Okay. I'm usually trying to work when I'm on a flight. Or you know, I did a little bit of work, and then I watched a couple of episodes of The Americans, which, by the way, is tremendous if you haven't if you haven't watched it. I'm rewatching that from the beginning. I'm in about season 4 right now, and it's...
I always start off with lofty ambitions on an airplane. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do all this work, and then it turns into, some episode of something.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Well, let's talk about these the different whiskeys we have in front of us here.
Okay, so... from left to right for you guys, right to left for you listening at home, the Medley Brothers is on the left, the Wathens is in the middle, and the Old Medley is on the right. And going left to right for you guys, that goes from youngest in age to highest in age. And age is perhaps the most important factor in differentiating flavors of bourbon. There are other things, including the mash bill, etc., but age is one of the most important things. And so the Medley Brothers is a 4-year-old 102 proof Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey. The Wathens in the middle is 7 or 8 years old, and it is it's 94 proof, usually 7 or 8 years old. It's the only single barrel iteration of these three, and then the Old Medley is a 12-year-old limited release allocated bourbon we do every year. And so Dan made the cocktail with the Medley Brothers, which Medley Brothers is what's called an overproof bourbon. It's over 100 proof. And so when you put bourbon into the barrel the day you make it, you have to put it in at any proof below 125.
Okay.
My dad has taught me that he feels that 117 proof is the ideal proof for entering a barrel today. Now, generations ago, they would go lower. He says he thinks around the turn of the previous century, 1900, that they were probably going in at... 100 proof. It makes a softer final product. So if you go in at 117, bourbon will generally increase as the proof will generally increase as it ages.
Because you're losing.
So right. So the first year the proof actually decreases a little bit. It's kind of a quirk. They tell me, and I'm not smart enough to know this, but they tell me that's because the alcohol molecules and the water molecules are not the same shape. Hmm. The alcohol molecules soak into the barrel at a slightly faster rate than the water molecules. Thus, in that first year where the barrel is dry,
you
use new charred white oak barrels to make bourbon, the alcohol molecules are going in slightly faster than the water molecules. So even though you think the overall proof is increasing, it actually slightly decreases that first year because more alcohol goes into the barrel and more water stays in the barrel,
right?
Stays as liquid. So then it increases, and then when you dump it, when it's 4 years old or 7 or 8 or 12, you add water to bring the proof down.
Back down again.
Yeah. So we bring the Medley Brothers 102. It's considered an overproof, and bartenders like you guys, I know you two are both bartenders, like to use overproof bourbon. It allows you to control your dilution better. It allows you to get a more serious flavor from the natural product, from your base spirit, which the bourbon is almost always the base spirit in a cocktail that uses bourbon. And then it also
allows you to have and serve a strong cocktail after you've added multiple other ingredients. For example, Dan making this sour had bourbon, he had sour mix too. If you started with an 80 proof bourbon, by the time you add your sour mix, et cetera, the proof is diminished, and sometimes you may be serving what you feel like is a weak drink. So a lot of times bartenders want to start with a higher proof bourbon, so they're not serving a weak drink.
By the way, Dan, this is awesome.
Delicious.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. A friend of mine texted me a week or two ago and said he was reading Raymond Chandler and he couldn't believe how many whiskey sours there were in these books. And he said, "What's your recipe for a whiskey sour?" And it had been a while since I'd made one. So I started playing around and, you know, reinvestigating the drink. And then I just got really into it and started making them all the time.
Yeah, no, it's perfect for
and
summer.
When it's 98 degrees out and like 130% humidity or something,
yeah,
that's when you want to have this drink.
Yeah.
Now, Sam, you said that the Medley Brothers, the first whiskey you were talking about, was a response to bartenders asking for something higher
proof.
So, yeah,
when my dad retired, he was actually a distiller he worked for. Ultimately, he worked for United Distillers and Vintners. And when he retired, he got an option to purchase the barrels of bourbon that he had made for them. And in purchasing that, he started the brand Wathins. He would choose the barrels one at a time, just like my grandfather Wathin Medley did when he started the Wathins brand back in the 50s and 60s. So my dad would choose the barrels one at a time. And then I got into the business after I finished school. And, you know, I would go around and we were in half a dozen or so states. And I'd say, oh, you know, I own Wathins and there's one brand and one proof and the whole story and my grandfather. And a lot of times bartenders would say, well, we want something that's a little bit higher proof. And so in the bourbon business, you can't suddenly have more bourbon. You have to make it and then wait for it to age. So right. We put in this plan whereby 2013 is when we launched the Medley Brothers. We would have four-year bourbon that we could do at 102 proof, younger age, 4 years old. So it's younger than the Wathins, but it would appeal to those bartenders who wanted that same flavor profile but at a higher proof, largely for the same reasons we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in particular that bartenders are asking for right now? Now that you've...
Malort?
I mean,
they asked for...
There's Malort.
Spoken like a true Kentuckian.
Yeah, you know, and a few years ago, we always got asked about doing a rye, a Medley Brothers rye. We get asked that a lot less now that the portfolio of rye whiskey available in the U.S. by brand has expanded a lot. So we get asked a lot less about that. My dad has always been resistant to the idea of doing rye. Frankly, because he just doesn't like it. He thinks it's a fad and everything else. And so we used to get asked for that. Now what we get asked for a lot is anything higher proof or barrel proof. And so, you know, there's some difficulty with that because to make something barrel proof, it's much more expensive. You're not selling any water.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we actually did a special release last year that you referenced when we were talking before the show about we did a Wathins barrel proof. And so when we did that, we picked 25 accounts around the country that were influential or big bourbon accounts or people that had supported us through the years. And we allowed them each to choose a single barrel of barrel proof Wathins that were a special project my dad had done that was a little bit lower barrel entry proof. So they were softer at barrel proof. And so one of those was selected by Jack Rose Dining Saloon here Washington, D.C. And they actually still have some of their Wathins barrel proof. The retail places, we did it in the fourth quarter of last year, sold out very quickly. But the on-premise places like Jack Rose still have some left. And in fact, Dan and I are doing an event there
Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m.
Thursday night.
Just for our listeners, it's down the hill.
I passed it on the way here. It's
over
like right here.
Right around the corner. If it's any indicator of how much people in this area in Washington love whiskey, Jack Rose is the largest collection in the Western Hemisphere?
That's what I understand.
Over 2,000 different labels?
It's they have a counter on their website that's constantly being updated.
That's
so
crazy.
It's like, you know, the population clock or something like that, except for the whiskey bottles aren't having babies. Bill Thomas is buying more.
Well, and it's clearly one of the best, you know, few whiskey or bourbon bars, whiskey bars in the country. I mean, it's incredible. The selection is incredible.
Yeah.
Everything they do there is top notch. And one of the advantages that Bill has, Bill Thomas, who Dan referenced, who owns Jack Rose, one of the advantages he has is that in Washington, D.C., he can buy stuff from non-distributor vendors and sell them, whereas in other markets, you can't do that. You have to buy from a distributor. And so he's not as limited as to what he can buy and sell there.
D.C. is a little bit of a quirky town for those listening abroad. we are allowed to bring in any bottles we want, right. Almost just sign a form, pay a little bit of extra tax.
Right. And so if he were somewhere else, he couldn't do that, but he can put his Jack Rose here in D.C. and have it be incredible.
Although I think one of the ways that we're seeing Jack Rose and maybe some other places in the U.S. and other parts of the world being influential is they just recently passed a law in Kentucky,
yes,
to legalize the, yeah, buying and selling.
So effective January 1 of this year in the state of Kentucky, you can, a retailer can, any product that is not currently available, as I understand, any product that is not currently available through a distributor, they can purchase anywhere, garage sale, you know, uncle's attic, anything else, and sell it. And so there is a store in downtown Lexington that opened at the beginning of this year called Justin's House of Bourbon. It's owned by a couple of good friends of mine, Justin Thompson and Justin Klein, no relation, who started this Justin's House of Bourbon that is this vintage bourbon shop that is unlike anything you've seen. It's incredible.
That sounds like...
They'd be great on your show, too. He's also the publisher of Bourbon Review magazine. Justin Thompson is.
Or does Whiskey Treasure Hunters.
That sounds like...
Yeah, exactly.
Now I'm surprised they're not cleaned out already.
Well, there's a lot of collections out there, but there are still... You can still find Dusties, as the people who hunt for them like to call them. I actually found a bottle of Old Fitzgerald bottled in bond at a store in D.C. on Saturday.
Wow.
So believe it or not, the stuff is still out there. Oh, yeah, I did. Believe me. But it's really interesting, and like it's allowing bars and restaurants to offer vintage bourbon flights, and so it's, the law's written in a little bit of a vague way, so how it's going to be interpreted is still kind of being worked out through practice and maybe eventually through legislation. So take advantage of it now before people decide it's too much of a good thing.
Now, before we get too far into this, we're going to go with a little two truths, one lie.
Two truths, one lie.
Cut out it.
Right on cue. Oh, by the way, just a shout out. Jack now has an intern. So, hi.
Alexia is here.
Alexia. So all the cues are going to be on time now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sorry.
Man, that was low.
Ouch, that was harsh.
Jack, thanks. I love you.
We have bourbon out here as you know.
What was that?
Oh. Eddie, you're a mean drunk.
All
right, sorry. Let's get back to two truths, one lie. This is kind of just an opportunity for you to lie to us. Eddie, Kim, and I will figure out which of your three statements are true and which of them is the lie.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
I had to think about this, okay? So, number one, we're in Washington, D.C., and our former president was Barack Obama, and he was nominated in 2008, the Democratic National Convention in Denver. I was in the room as a volunteer when he was nominated. That's number one. Number two is that my mother's brother was a professional magician, and in the early 80s, as a child, I was able to be a guest and appear on a Doug Henning World of Magic show that aired on NBC, if you remember Doug Henning. And number three is, as Dan referenced, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I've seen a game in every single major league park, all 30, plus 23 that are closed.
Oh, he doesn't skip a single beat. Yeah. I'm so torn right now.
You're good at this.
Ugh.
All right, Eddie, where are you leaning? I feel like the magician is pretty cool. Obama thing makes sense, but I'm gonna say the Obama thing is a lie. I feel like it makes too much sense.
Really?
All right, we're split
after,
on this.
After your little, your brush with,
just maybe I should let the listeners know. I got to hang out with Obama this weekend.
Both of the Obamas.
He was circulating around town this weekend.
But you didn't get a chance to ask him if he remembers.
I didn't get to ask him anything. Let's just say I was like a foot away from him.
So apparently everyone's had a brush with the 44th president. Dan, have you?
No.
No. Someday.
Yeah, he hasn't made it to room 11 yet.
That you know of. How do you know?
I usually hear when famous people come in.
Yes.
Sure.
The grapevine.
I'll follow your lead on this one.
No, you said.
I think the Obama thing is a lie.
Okay, I will follow that then.
Those you're both going to say the same thing?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, we are together.
The Doug Henning thing is a total lie. My mother doesn't.
I believe in magic. I wanted to believe it was true.
I've known Sam for 4 years, and I was going to go with Obama was the lie, too. Because the Doug Henning thing just sounded...
It sounded, I don't know. I still want to believe in magic.
So you were part of one of the tricks?
No, that was a lie. That was the lie.
Oh, wait. I got it wrong. Yes. Oh, God, this is a confusing game.
What was confusing about it? I mean, the two truths, one lie.
You don't know our previous episodes. Everyone gets
confused. Let's just say we win every time.
Yeah, they're really bad at this.
So. Well, the key to making the good lie is give details that are so detailed that someone would say, well, he couldn't make that up. You know, yeah, World of Magic in the early 80s, Doug Henning. I mean, you all know who he is, but...
That's really true, actually.
And Doug Henning is the mayor of Palm Springs?
Is that truth or lie?
No, that's also a lie. That was a line from... That was a line from the best television show ever, Golden Girls.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Maybe when we get back, Sam will stop lying to us. You're listening to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio.
Today's break song is Keto, Bring a Little Love. That's K-I-E-D-O. We'll be right back on Shift Drink. Keep it locked.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us again. You're listening to Shift Drink at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm here with Matthew Ramsey, as well as Sam Medley of Medley Distillers and Dan Searing. On the Medley Brothers bottle, I see right in front of me, right on the neck, it says Heart of the Run.
Yeah, so that logo, so if you look at this bottle, it's a white label that has the faces of the five Medley Brothers. There were actually six. One had died before they started this brand.
Which one do you most look like?
Well, the people that knew them tell me I look most like Eddie, but I think that's just because he was fat. But my grandfather is Wathan, fourth from the left. And they're actually, can you tell what order they're in?
No, is it alphabetical?
No, they drew straws. There's no way to tell.
Oh, okay.
They drew straws, and so they're on there in that order. But when I redid the label, my good friends at TDA Boulder Ad Agency in Boulder, Colorado, redid that label, which I think is a tremendous looking label.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I gave them some old labels from the 50s. And I said, I want it to look like you took a label from the 50s, pushed pause, and then undid the pause button in 2013. And it looks just like that. So they actually duplicated the Heart of the Run logo. That logo has become kind of a popular bartender tattoo logos. There's a bar in Seattle, Washington called Whiskey West that's a very cool whiskey bar, and a bunch of the staff members went and got that Heart of the Run logo as tattoos. Now, I have to tell you, as bartenders, this was not the first tattoo for any of these people. It was probably not the 50th tattoo for any of these people. But that's a very cool thing to have done, to go and do that. It describes a production process. Heart of the Run is where you discard the heads and tails of any production run to create a continuity of product and get rid of the parts that are sort of the outliers and create a similar product. If you think of cooking a beef tenderloin, you know, you want to cook it so the middle is the best and the ends probably are a little done. They're overdone. Yeah. So you cut them off. It's the same kind of thing. Heart of the Run, that was my grandfather and his brother's philosophy, was to discard the heads and tails from any production run. No, it's a very small percentage, by the way.
If there's any evidence of how romanticized like bourbon bourbon production is, the middle part, the best part of the run is called the heart.
Right.
And you want to get rid of the head, which is the first part of the distillation run, and the tails is the last part.
Exactly. And so that logo is actually the same logo that was on the bottle in the 50s. And if you think about it, that was kind of a futuristic looking logo and font for the 50s. It's very Mad Men era looking, I think. It looks sort of like 60s era. So it was sort of futuristic for that time. But by today, 2018, and when we redid this label in 2013, it's very retro and throwback.
Mm-hmm. We had a food illustrator on recently, and we know how we discussed a little bit how like image really matters a lot to a product. The Wathen's bourbon and the Old Medley bourbon come in fairly unique, squarish bottles, and I don't think that's really replicated anywhere else in the bourbon industry.
So my dad chose that bottle, and he chose it originally for Wathen's for a couple of reasons. And one was it was available. You know, you could get the bottle. The bottle was originally manufactured by a German company. I think it's currently manufactured by a British company. So it's the glass itself is imported. But also he felt like it was a unique look to it. It was an unusual look to it, and it had what's called pinched dimple on the sides that are friendly for bartenders to hold the bottle. And so Elmer T. Lee is another brand that we are not affiliated with, but they use the exact same bottle. And there's another bourbon brand that's very famous that the original bottlings of this brand also use that same bottle. Anybody want to guess what that is?
Is it Bulleit?
It is Bulleit.
Oh. Ah.
So before Tom Bulleit before he sold his brand, which ultimately now is owned by Diageo, he used this exact same bottle. And so occasionally you will see, and I'm certain that they have at Jack Rose, original Bulleit bottlings that are that exact same bottle.
Which is funny, kind of going back to your whole label thing, because do you guys remember that show Deadwood on HBO?
Mm-hmm.
They would show the Bulleit bottle as is today as this old archaic thing, which was like really cool.
Right. So this is manufactured now that's a different...
That's
thing,
funny.
Yeah.
I mean, whiskey runs, you know, thick through the veins of American history. Does Medley Brothers have a part in this? I remember seeing in like an interview you did that your grandfather may have invented the concept of single barrel.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I don't know that that's something you invent. But what happened was in the 50s, Medley Distilling Company was a little bit different. Very different than what our company, Charles Medley Distillery, is today. Today, we're a branding company. We own brands of bourbon, and we contract to distill the bourbon to our specifications and own these brands. In the 50s, my grandfather and his brothers were much more of a contract producer. So people would come to them and ask them to make for them or supply them with bourbon or other liquor that they had made under whatever label they wanted. You know, so they would make whatever label. Now, they own their own brands, Medley Brothers being one of them. But my grandfather was the president of the company, and he wanted to have something special in his home to serve to his guests. So he created the brand Wathen's, which was his first name, and he just would do it privately in his home. And, of course, they ran their own bottling facility, and they ran their own label printing. They had a print shop. I mean, they did everything, you know, head to tail then. And so he would just have the print shop make a new label that he called Wathen's Kentucky Bourbon. And he would choose one barrel at a time. And, of course, he would choose what he thought were the best spots in the warehouse. He'd choose the barrels from what he thought were the sweet spots. He'd bottle one barrel at a time, serve it in his home to his guests. Then when he ran out, he'd go choose another barrel. And so he actually died in 1980. And Blanton's was the first brand to use the term single barrel. They did so about 1984. So he died before ever hearing the term single barrel. But he sort of pioneered that concept just because he wanted to have a cool brand for himself.
Yeah.
Now, what speaking of which, I ought to do that.
Yeah. I think we all should. What designates, you mentioned the sweet spot. Like, what is that, just ideal conditions?
Well, every distiller will have a different answer for you.
Okay.
And some say higher in the warehouse, some say lower, some say everything else. Today, we actually rent warehouse space, and we dictate that all of our barrels are spread throughout the warehouse other than the first floor. Now, the reason other than the first floor is my father believes that bourbon does not age as efficiently on the first floor of a warehouse. It's too low to the ground. He's actually described situations he's seen in his past, and he's 70. He'll be 77 at the end of the summer, but he says he's seen warehouses that had a basement level.
he said, you could never get bourbon to age in a basement level. You know, it needs to be second floor or higher. So today we have them second floor and higher, outside to inside and throughout. And the reason we do that is for the Wathens brand. We want there to be a little bit of variation from barrel to barrel. Every barrel is hand numbered. We have an aggressive barrel program where we choose about 100 customers a year that taste from barrel samples. I have them in my luggage. That they get to taste from barrel samples and say, we want barrel number 6805. That's a Jerky Boys reference. Yeah. Y'all get Jerky Boys. So 6805, and they get to have every case from barrel number 6805. My grandfather said that he liked barrels that were in the warehouse in what he called the knots, and N-O-T-S, not K-N-O-T-S. So for example, not the top, but not the bottom. Not the outside, but not the inside. Not the corners, not eat the other corners. Sort of that area that makes a square or a cube in the middle that's not right in the middle, but not on the outside. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
The upside down.
So in other words, no, it does not make sense.
Somewhere in the middle. Can 5 feet this way or that way really make that much difference?
You know, it does. Now, it doesn't make difference because it's 5 feet apart. The way I describe it is, it makes a difference because that first few months that bourbon, which is clear the day you make it,
yeah,
goes into the barrel, it starts on a trajectory that two barrels right next to each other might take a slightly different path. And so if you think of two people on an 8-year journey,
sure,
take Wathens for example, and they start at the same spot and they're just slightly off, by 8 years later, they're way different.
Yeah.
Now, we don't want the Wathens barrels to be way different. You want there to be what my dad calls subtle variations. What he actually says is pockets on the same vest. So you want to have just slight differences from each barrel to barrel. Bourbon connoisseurs love finding those barrels that have those differences, whether it's this one has a much more banana bread note, or this one has a tropical fruit note, or this one has a very long finish.
Yeah.
So bourbon connoisseurs want to find on single barrel products individual barrels that have what I call a cool factor.
Right. The thing that makes them unique.
How about you, Sam? Like,
I have no cool factor.
You have no cool factor. No, you're plenty cool. But what, first of all, what kind of bourbons do you look for that you particularly like? And then second, two-part question, what kind of small country contributions have you made as being an eighth generation bourbon maker?
Let's do the second part first. So my contributions are pretty negligible as far as the products themselves. I do and will do, when my dad is no longer able to advise on production, I will do exactly the same thing. The same mash bill, the same barrel entry proof, the same distillation proof, the same grain suppliers. I will do everything, the same contract distiller that he has taught me how to do. So as far as the actual product, I'm just doing what he taught me how to do, not changing anything. I think he's kind of doing what his Uncle Tommy taught him to do. Of the five guys on the bottle, Tommy was the distiller in that group. And my father was very close with Tommy, and Tommy taught him a lot about distilling. Now, as far as the branding, that's where my influence comes in. So, you know, I made the decision. I started kind of running the company in 2003 as my dad moved towards retirement. He's completely retired now. And then in 2013, we launched these other brands, Medley Brothers and Old Medley. And then starting in 2015, we do some special release in the fourth quarter of every year. Last year, it was the barrel proof. We did 25 barrels of Wathens barrel proof in 2017. We're going to do 50 barrels this year. It's about the maximum we can do for the next few years,
yeah,
simply because that's how much product I have. I can't make myself have more product. We don't buy product that somebody else already has made. So
right.
You know, I only have as much as I've made. So I would say my contributions are not as much about the product. I just keep it the same, and much more about the branding and things like that. Your first question was,
what do you like in a bourbon, or what do you look for?
So, okay. And this is a little nerdy, I guess,
but deep.
I look for are the ones that have the like banana or yeasty or tropical fruit notes. So I gravitate to the Old Medley. So if you think of the flavor profile of each of these three brands, the four-year bourbon is going to have a flavor profile that's reflective of the grains. It's only had 4 years in the barrel to take the characteristics of the barrel. The 12-year, which I like, the Old Medley, is going to have a lot more of the characteristics of the barrel. The barrel brings three primary flavor characteristics to the product. The first two are obvious. The barrel itself, the oak or the wood, and then the smoke or char from where the inside of the barrel is burned. But the third one that the barrel brings is that red line or that toasted oak cells. It's called the cambium layer. And you've had 12 years of exposure to that layer of cells where the oak is not raw oak, but it's also not totally burned. If you think of a marshmallow, when you toast a marshmallow at a campfire, you don't want to just eat the raw marshmallow. You also don't want to just burn that. Some people do, but I don't like
it. There's only one way to do it, and
that's it. Yeah, I don't like burning it all the way till it's black. You want to change the characteristic of it, but not just, you know, incinerate it. So it's the same thing with that layer of cells. That layer of cells brings the vanilla, creates a chemical called vanillin, which is the same chemical that gives vanilla its scent and flavor. So it brings vanilla and all of those subtle characteristics like tropical fruit notes, banana bread, things like that. So I look for the ones that have that. That's why I go for the old medley. The other side of that question is I like mine on ice, on crushed ice, because, I mean, looking at you guys, it's not that hot in here, and I look like I've had to push my car. So I'm always hot, and so I want it cooled down.
Okay. I was actually going to ask you what your opinion on the mint julep is, since it's such a, you know, popular way of drinking bourbon.
Well, it's funny because I've been to the Derby, I think, 14 times. Did not go this year. But, you know, Churchill Downs kind of faces to the south, and all these people come from out of town to the Kentucky Derby, and they drink these mint juleps, which are very sweet and very refreshing, and on the big glass of crushed ice. So at the end of a day, you've been to the Derby, you've been out there for 8 hours swilling down these drinks. These people from out of town are drunker than a bicycle. I mean, they're in the floor. You see them at the end of the
drunker
day.
Drunker than
you
a bicycle. Okay.
You see them laying in the bathroom, laying in the hall in suits, you know, ladies in dresses, or just they can't even stand up. So I love a mint julep, but it's not something you want to drink every day of the year.
Now, I was looking at your history, the family history, and it seems like you went dark in Prohibition. Was that the actual case?
It was. So there were a certain number of distilleries that had a license to produce for medicinal purposes. My family was not one of those.
Okay.
Now, Prohibition lasted, I think, 13 years. I think it ended December 5th of 1933. And my great-grandfather, John Thomas Aquinas Medley, was a Prohibition-era distiller, which is kind of a sucky job if you think about it. But when Prohibition ended in 1933, he already owned a distillery, and he immediately started distilling. And whereas all of the product that you have today is at least 4 years in oak, he barreled his for 30 days, and then he sold 30-day bourbon.
Right.
Have you ever had 30-day bourbon?
Sounds pretty clear.
That sounds pretty great,
not
actually.
It's not great.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Unless you've had no bourbon for 13 years, in which case you think it's phenomenal. So he bottled Old Medley as a brand. He started the Old Medley brand, and he called it Old Medley as a marketing deal. So in other words, I'll put Old Medley on here, and customers will think it's old. And of course, there was no internet in 1933, so nobody could go find out everything.
Suckers.
Yeah, they couldn't find everything out. And then today, in 2018, you can go to the internet and find out a bunch of things that are not true. But you assume that they're true because they're on the internet. So he sold Old Medley, and then he sold 60-day bourbon, and then he sold 90-day bourbon, and then nobody remembered 60-day bourbon, and then he sold 6-month bourbon, and he worked his way up to 4 years, which is today what's kind of considered the standard minimum age. In fact, by law, it is the minimum age that you can put on a label that says Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey without having a disclaimer about the age.
Without having a disclaimer.
Yeah, so if it's 2 years to 4 years, you could say aged 2 years or 36 months or whatever. But if it's 4 years
still be called
old,
Kentucky bourbon.
Correct, yes. Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. But if it's 4 years old, it's at least 4 years old if it says Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, unless there's a disclaimer on the label.
My great grandfather back in Prohibition was a bootlegger for Al Capone. And he made a little whiskey called Old Crow.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, that was his thing. My grandma would tell stories about getting chased down by Elliot Ness and, like, getting shot at while, like, in a car chase.
I think that was the brand reputed to be the favorite of Ulysses S. Grant as well, if I recall correctly.
I don't even
know.
That
may be apocryphal, I don't know.
I don't know. But, yeah, she would tell stories about putting labels on and false addicts and stuff like that. And it's pretty wild.
I wanted to mention, in reference to Sam talking about the nerdier aspects of whiskey production, one of the other things that he's going to do while he's in town is on Wednesday night, along with my brother-in-law, Kelly Young, I host a monthly series of whiskey classes as the Whiskey Brothers, and Sam's going to be our special guest on this Wednesday.
Awesome.
In the reading room at Petworth Citizen. So we're going to taste these whiskeys plus some other whiskeys in the age statement and non-age statement version, and Sam's going to talk to us in even more detail about the influence of age on whiskey. So if you want to dig deep, come and join us for that.
Right on.
Yeah, it's a great series. I helped out with when you did Japanese whiskey fairly recently. So
by helped out, Eddie means he kept it from going off the rails completely, because we had twice as many guests as we normally have.
Well, Japanese whiskey is so popular right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and Eddie's very knowledgeable of it, so he was our special guest at that one.
So hot. actually, well, before we jump into our next segment, can I have some whiskey?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to taste all three, I always recommend going youngest to oldest, okay. Simply because that gives you the greatest comparison.
So we are tasting the Medley Brothers 4-year 102 proof.
And I guess while we're doing this, would you rather? Yeah, that's would you rather.
Oh, okay, yes.
All right, so this is kind of while we sip on these. Eddie and I have been concocting a pretty new game that's not that new.
New games. And if you have any suggestions for new games, please let us know. Any drunken games that you play at home. But one game that I like to play is Would You Rather. So we give you two fairly ridiculous scenarios. And which one would you rather do? This one's come up by Matthew, so.
Eddie's learned to preface these things now.
Yes.
Drink Amaretto Sours or Midori Sours for the rest of eternity?
You know, they always put for the rest of eternity. Would you rather eat at one restaurant or the other if you only have one? I think you'd get tired of the Midori Sours. They're great, you know. Yeah. I mean, they're cheap, but they're great. But I think Amaretto Sours.
Money is no cost. Money is no.
No, I mean, they're not exactly a whole lot of thought that goes into them. But I guess an Amaretto Sour is a little bit more complex, and it's also for the rest of eternity involves winters and summers. And I think Midori Sour, when it's 20 degrees outside, would drive you nuts. So I'm going Amaretto Sour.
So I have an Amaretto Sour in my mind that I would drink. Is there one that in particular that you've had anywhere in the country?
Not in specific, but I think the last Midori Sour I had was at TGI Fridays when I was in college.
I know. I'm going to ask what you're going to say.
Explain, which is
Jeffrey Morgenthaler's Amaretto Sour,
so
right?
Good.
Which adds a crucial ingredient, which is whiskey.
Yeah.
I believe bourbon, if I'm correct.
Yes, high proof bourbon.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if we can have an idealized, would you rather?
Have you all been to his place?
Pepe Lomoco, and so he is a great bartender.
Has
written two books out of Portland, Portland, Oregon, and he was at Clyde Common at first, and now he's at Pepe Lomoco, one of the best grasshopper ice cream grasshopper milkshake I've ever had in my life.
That is a good recipe.
They're Watham's customers. You can get Watham's.
Oh, great, great. Well, let's.
What's the next question?
Let's, you know what, fuck it. Let's go into rapid fire.
Time for the payback. Rapid
fire. All right, so rapid fire. First thing that comes to your mind, or as quickly as possible.
Okay, go.
This comes from a little bit of research I was doing. If you had a famous celebrity spokesperson to represent your whiskeys, who would it be?
How does that come from research you were doing?
You look up bourbon and you see Matthew McConaughey's face, Mia
Kunis'
face.
I think Tom Amendees has the most authoritative voice.
Tom Amendees?
Yeah.
Who is that?
He was the father on Everwood.
Oh. Okay. You are touching my nostalgic teenage heart right now.
Hey, well.
I like it.
Wow.
I mean, it's easy to say Johnny Depp, right? Who, by the way, like myself, is from Owensboro, Kentucky.
Okay.
Does
he represent a whiskey?
I don't think.
All right, Johnny Depp.
He's more of a perfume representing guy, I think.
I think I want Tom Hardy to represent whatever distillate I make. I think he'd be a good front man.
Okay.
I can say I would drink whatever he was selling.
Yeah. He has so many good voices.
He was so good at grunting in that movie about the moonshiners.
He was in the Lawless, right?
Yeah.
That's
right. Just like 50% of his dialogue was just.
Yeah.
But it was really, it was like a Brando-esque kind of grunt.
It was gruff. It was like if Bane was doing it, you know?
Or your mezcal, if you ever start producing mezcal.
That's never going to happen.
Okay.
That's, I'll drink all of it, but yeah, that's a lot. Okay, if you didn't work in the whiskey business, what else would you be doing?
I'd like to be an attorney.
Attorney? Okay. I would.
What kind of attorney?
Probably a personal injury attorney, which is a little bit trashy, except that to me, there is a certain appeal to fighting on behalf of the little guy against the big, evil insurance people who want to say no to anything that their insureds do wrong. They say no to paying for anything that their insureds do wrong.
Better call Sam.
It's also, yes, exactly. It's also pretty lucrative.
Yeah. I think this would be a good TV show.
Which one?
That one where you're fighting against the evil big guys.
Isn't that what they do? Don't they always just sue insurance companies who don't want to pay when their client runs somebody over or something?
That's some of what they do, for sure, yeah. Sometimes it's also like just writing a letter like, my client found a pebble in a box of cornflakes. What are you going to do for me?
My client sued because he found out that Crunchberry Crunch did not include actual crunchberries because they're not a real berry.
False.
All right. What was the last mischievous thing you've done?
I don't know that we can talk about that.
That must have been pretty good, man.
Yeah?
I don't know. I mean, the last mischievous thing I've done?
Sex, drugs, or rock and roll?
I don't know. Okay. I don't have a good answer for
okay,
that.
Okay.
I mean, I have a good answer, but I'll tell you when we're not on the show. Okay.
That'll be in the liner notes.
Most memorable evening you've had in one of your, I want to say establishments, but I don't know. I guess.
A restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last memorable meal.
Oh, the last memorable meal?
Or dining out.
Yeah, dining out.
So I went in March. I was in Austin, Texas, and I had some family that lived there, and we went to dinner at Pitchfork Pretty, which is, I think, new. Relatively new as a restaurant. They had the best fried chicken I've had all year. It was absolutely a memorable meal.
And you're a Popeye's aficionado.
Much more of a Bojangles aficionado than Popeye's.
Bojangles, that seasoning.
And I've heard that word pronounced afficando. Not aficionado. I don't know. I've heard both, so I don't know which is correct.
So I've also heard Bojangles as Bojangles. So.
I have heard that as well. I like to say it Bojangles.
Is that like Tarjay?
Yeah. Chipotle.
Okay.
I've never eaten in a Chipotle.
I'm going to keep it with the food category. What is your favorite? What is your deathbed last meal?
I mean, last food item or last meal?
Meal.
So you can have multiple courses. One of my very favorite restaurants is Frasca Food and Wine in Boulder, Colorado, where I live. In fact, my mother was visiting me last week, and we went there for dinner. About 10 years ago, I had this like lobster tempura thing that was the best thing I've eaten. I wish they'd bring it back. That would be my last meal.
Yeah, that sounds pretty dope.
It was incredible.
A beverage?
I only get one, right? And I guess at this point I'm not worried about my health anymore, so I'll have, like, you know, a 2 liter of cheer wine.
Cheer wine.
Cheer wine.
Cheer wine, it has a history with bourbon, but it's like a kind of a North Carolina tradition.
It is. It's made in North Carolina. It's sort of like a cherry Dr. Pepper. You know, these southern areas have their regional soft drinks. They have Ale 8-1, have you heard of that? Which is sort of like a tangier ginger ale. It's made in Winchester, Kentucky. It's available in Kentucky.
A tangier ginger ale.
I was in Lexington in April for an event, and they were just launching Cherry Ale 8-1. My God, it's tremendous.
And there's Verner's up in Michigan. Okay. And one last question. What is your most unusual nighttime or morning ritual?
I don't know that I have a nighttime or morning ritual.
We got to get new questions, Eddie.
Yes, okay.
Well, I mean, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I don't know that it's unusual that I brush my teeth and take a shower. Is that unusual?
That's super weird.
Yeah, all right, fine. Here, we'll change it up. Heroes in life. Who are your heroes?
There we go.
Anywhere. Real or imaginary?
Oh, what a great question.
I thought the ritual question was pretty good.
I mean, I think heroes is different than who you admire. You know, I mean, like, I have a lot of admiration for genuine entrepreneurs like Jeff Bezos and Mark Cuban, who are people that took something that they started, that they built into something massive. So I have a ton of admiration for those two people. I don't know that I would say that they are heroes. You know, I mean, is Jeff Bezos anyone's hero?
But, like, let's talk about hero worship and someone that you... both their accomplishments, but even beyond that.
I mean,
that.
Anybody that has the courage to stand up against authority and power when they're in the right, but it's risky for them to do so. Martin Luther King obviously is the one that comes to mind as somebody in our country's history that did that. But sort of anybody that has that power to stand up when they know that they're right, but it's tough to stand up against an authority, that is something that I would have both a hero and an admiration for. What do you think?
Yeah.
Pretty hard to beat Martin Luther King.
Well, I know, but then it's also kind of easy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think maybe particularly in the contemporary socio-political environment, it's worth repeating because there's lots of battles that are being fought all over the country over many different things.
And it's harder now than it has been to be stand up for the little guy when you know you're right. You know that you're right, but still, it's very tough to do. It's harder now than it has been in the last 30 years, maybe, to do that.
All right. Well,
what else?
No, that was amazing. Let's kick it to our last game.
Marry, fuck, kill.
Fuck, marry, kill.
Now, Sam, are you familiar with this game?
Of course. Who's
okay.
not?
Okay.
We've had a couple people who are unfamiliar with this game. So,
if not bourbon, then scotch, Japanese whiskey, or rye. Marry, fuck, kill.
Oh, great question. I don't want to say I hate. That's a terrible word.
Well, you got to kill one. I know. You want to kill someone.
I would kill scotch. It's too smoky.
Okay.
For me. There are a lot of people that love it, etc. I guess there's enough variation in the ways you can drink and use rye that you'd want to marry it, but Japanese whiskey is great for one night, so you'd want to fuck it.
Yeah.
Is that a fair answer?
Yeah, that's great.
That's good.
It's great for one night.
All right. Well, thank you guys for
joining
us.
That's it? That's the only one?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
We have another one. I mean, we have another Marry, Fuck, Kill if you want to go for it.
Let's do it.
Okay, fine. Whiskey spokespeople. So I'm going to give you a list, and you can Marry, Fuck, Kill. Matthew McConaughey.
Or Ghost.
I have four choices, actually.
Are there four people?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Ghost, one of them. Matthew McConaughey, Mia Kunis, Sammy Davis Jr., and Bill Murray all have represented whiskeys.
See you later, Bill Murray.
Oh, no. He's one of our reoccurring guests.
Oh, is he really? Yeah.
Sayonara.
Well, now, so here's the deal. In Kentucky, you're either blue or you're red.
Okay.
You all know what that means?
It's a sports thing, right?
You're either a Kentucky fan or a Louisville fan.
Yes.
My family bleeds blue. We're Kentucky fans. I'm the kid who literally grew up in the blue bedroom. My dad's still a season ticket holder. He doesn't go to all the games. We're Kentucky fans, top to bottom, and I'm the biggest Kentucky fan that you will meet. So they're blue. Bill Murray's son is an assistant basketball coach who has just been hired at Louisville.
Wow, that went a lot deeper than I thought it would.
Thus, whoa. See you later, Bill Murray. We don't need you anymore. And you haven't been funny in 30 years anyway.
Oh.
I think Sammy Davis Jr. would be pretty fascinating for, you know, to talk to for one night. So I'd say you'd want to fuck him, but marry Mila Kunis, right? Wouldn't you want to marry Mila Kunis? Is it Mia or Mila?
Mila.
It's Mila.
Mila.
Yeah, right.
Mila.
And then I don't even remember who the fourth one is.
Matthew
so I guess they're. Oh, he's perfect to be ghosted. He hadn't really harmed anybody, but he's annoying.
All right.
You know,
right,
he hadn't done anything, and he's a cool guy, but, you know, see, we don't need to harm him. But. And Bill Murray isn't funny.
Jack's laughing through his head right now. I can hear him.
I mean, he's like drunk in the booth singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game inappropriately. He's just, I don't know. Is he.
Bill Murray has actually dined here in this hotel.
Bill Murray's all over. He's everywhere in Charleston. I think he lives in Charleston.
Yeah, I think he's actually about to start up a food truck business.
Oh, okay. I'm going to see his ass in the back of a hot food truck serving me, you know, Hispanic opener or something.
Well, Sam, thank you for joining us. Dan, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you.
You can revisit this week's episodes or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever the fuck you grab your podcasts. And find us on all the social media at ShiftDrinkDC. And don't forget to throw us a review on iTunes.
A special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux and our intro music and DJ Rec Tech for our sound effects. Next week, we welcome our regular contributor, Bill Murray.
He's so funny.
To discuss his expose on English teas, 50 Shades of Earl Grey. Anyways, pursue happiness, guys. Have a good day.
Adios.